Today's episode of the Glass Half Empty podcast is brought to you by Kingsford Charcoal. Baseball season may be winding down, but there is no off season when it comes to firing up the grill. Stay stoked all year. And be sure to check out Kingsford's hilarious new video featuring the immortal Bartolo Colon on Twitter, at Kingsford.
Rogers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rogers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast on the Big Lead. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. We are joined by the working 24/7, 365 Mike Florio today. Mike, of course, is the founder of ProFootballTalk.com. He hosts a radio and TV show of the same title. It's on from 6 to 9 a.m. on NBC Sports Radio, simulcasted from 7 to 9 on NBCSN. He hosts the PFT PM podcast about three afternoons per week, and he appears on NBC's Football Night in America on Sunday nights. Mike, how is everything going with you today?
Everything is good. We're in a nice groove, a nice routine. 6 weeks into the season, it's flying by. It's been a fun year, and you know, everything so far is holding together, which is all I can really ask for when things get busy.
It always does fly by. Now, one of the prevailing narratives that both of us have followed this year is that ratings are up pretty much across the board. That was just stamped into truthfulness this weekend with everybody up, including ESPN up a whopping 38% year over year with the thrilling Rodgers comeback. So I'm going to give this three tranches of why you think things are up. How much of it do you think is the fact that anybody who left over player protests, it's just they left and they already did, they're gone, so they're not really in the equation anymore? B, the protests aren't being covered as much, the president isn't responding to them, so even though they're still happening in some regard, they aren't happening as much in people's kind of focus. And then three, how much of it is about star quarterbacks, Rodgers not being hurt, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, let me work backward. I'll start with the last one. I think that the issue of quarterbacks playing and playing well and scoring being up and touchdowns being up and touchdown passes being up and every marker for quarterback play being up and the games being closer and more exciting and exciting games in prime time, all of that comes together to create a situation where the ratings naturally increase. The NFL loves that. Every week they push to the media these new measurements, and every week it's been highest point total through X weeks of the season, highest touchdowns through X weeks of the season, and they like that because they believe that's one of the main reasons why the ratings are increasing. And of course, as the ratings go up, I don't know if you saw what I reported over the weekend, the NFL actually wanted to do a new labor deal before the next Super Bowl, Super Bowl 53, in an effort to give the networks some sense that there'll be labor peace to help preserve the expected increase in the rights fees. And now that the ratings are up, the NFL doesn't feel compelled to do that because they think the leverage against the networks is going to come like it always does from being able to say, hey, everything's fine and people are watching the game. On the Trump factor, that really has died down. And when you look at the statement that was issued by the league after that deal with Canada, helped the NFL in some kind of obscure, minor way, which surely doesn't add much to the NFL's bottom line, I get real suspicious that there's been some kind of deal struck behind the scenes that the president's going to leave the NFL alone. And the proof is in the pudding. He largely has in recent weeks. And then as to the people who huffed and puffed and said they were going to walk away last year, I was always skeptical about that, Ryan. It's very easy to say I'm never watching the NFL again and then keep on watching it. I mean, early on in our days at PFT, I would be a lot more aggressive in the things I'd write and the opinions that I'd have. I mean, we were trying to establish a foothold. I was trying to find a voice. And I would constantly get emails from people saying they were never coming back again. And meanwhile, the traffic kept going up and up and up. So anytime anyone says, I'm never doing X again, and if they feel strongly enough about what it is that they're following or watching to react that way, chances are they come back. And chances are they never leave.
So the first thing we talked about with the scoring way up and how the league thinks that is increasing ratings, they can only do that once. Like, they can't make scoring go up that much more from here before it feels like we're watching like a 55-48 game between West Virginia and Texas Tech. So do you see that as a band-aid or something that's sustainable?
Well, I mean, the question is, can they find the sweet spot where there are more games that land in that range of 35-31, 38-35, 41-38? That Patriots-Chiefs game was on the fringe of being too high scoring. And every once in a while, you'll see a game that goes haywire, 52-49 a couple of years ago, I think was a Saints-Giants score. But typically, if you can get the games in that range where both teams score in the 30s, I think that the bottom line is that is sustainable. Now, that doesn't mean there's going to be a dramatic increase every year, but for now, I think they're thrilled to see the trend reverse. They had to get nervous. Because I think 2016 was I thought it was the aberration because of the election, and I thought the ratings would come back in 2017. When they kept going down, it's like, uh-oh, something's up here. And any increase, for whatever reason, I think the NFL is willing to embrace that and revel in that, and that's why all this talk about the roughing the passer fouls, you know, those aren't going to go away because they believe that one of the keys to the kinds of exciting games, but not too exciting, not too high scoring, is keeping the quarterbacks upright and healthy for as much of the season as possible.
The new blood of quarterbacks with Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, and Josh Allen have all gotten starts as rookies. Patrick Mahomes has been absolutely electric. He's essentially a rookie because this is his first year starting. And then you throw in Jared Goff still on his rookie deal, Carson Wentz still on his rookie deal. There was almost kind of like a lost generation of quarterbacks in between like the Rodgers, Breeze, Roethlisberger, Rivers, Eli Mannings of the world and what we're seeing today. And we're finally getting some new blood that's exciting about the position at the position. How do you feel about that?
Well, yeah, and I agree with you there. And I don't know why that is. I think it's a combination of the scouting departments doing a better job identifying who the best quarterbacks are, right, and selecting the best quarterbacks. The best quarterbacks in any given class are clustering at the top of the draft and therefore getting opportunities sooner than usual to get on the field and become the players they can be. I think the NFL coaches are doing a better job of adjusting their systems. You know, a lot of times coaches are very determined that it's got to be their system, and they're going to make the player fit their system. Instead of that, they're adjusting it and revising it, tweaking it, so that the quarterback who had success in college is running plays similar to those he was successful with at the lower level, and lo and behold, you do the things that the guy's good at, and he's going to be good at the next level. And so that's why, and also just the fact that you look at all the passing now in the college level, and all the 7-on-7 camps that are out there, you know, these guys are getting more and more opportunities to develop into great players. And so by the time you do the final scouting, you have more evidence and you can make more reliable decisions about who the best guys are. So I think a lot of factors are coming into play here, and better quarterbacks mean better football, to the point where they could maybe even, if this trend continues, where the guys taken at the top of the draft every year become starters and become better than average, you can get to a point where you can say, you know what, we're going to expand the NFL. Because my argument has been for years, you can't even talk about expanding the NFL because there aren't enough quarterbacks. If the quarterbacks just keep rolling out of college like this, at some point you have to expand.
So you guys added a big free agent acquisition this offseason. Peter King, longtime SI MMQB writer, obviously, as anyone who listens to this probably knows, he joined your NBC Pro Football Talk umbrella, and there's a lot more interest in the NFL this year, to me, it seems, than in the previous two seasons. I assume you've had a pretty nice 2 months of traffic?
Yeah, I mean, I've been pleasantly surprised. I was just at the point where, because there's so many other options out there for digital destinations where people can get information, and you're competing with Twitter and social media generally, you know, we had seen a decline year over year. 2015 was the peak for us, too. I think Deflategate had a lot to do with our traffic being up every month of the year and ridiculously high numbers in months that are usually slow, thanks to the Deflategate investigation and litigation. So we saw the drop in 2016. Last year, try to hold our own, and then this year we're starting to climb back out of it. And it's, you know, it's gratifying. I think we were up between 20% and 25% on traffic in September over 2017. So hopefully that's a trend that's going to continue.
And another like thing that I think has helped both Pro Football Talk and the Big Lead, that those stories about like the kind of Facebook fraudulent video stats are coming out this week. And there were a lot of other outlets that went really heavy into putting videos on Facebook more so than yours and ours did. And I'm not saying that neither of us do any videos, but I don't think we were as gung-ho in that avenue as some of the marketplace. And so as people shifted from text to that type of platform, now all of a sudden, like, there's less competition than there might have been in 2016. Do you buy any of that?
That may have something to do with it. I was never a believer in this notion that text was dying. I know that the ad model had changed, and I think the ad model is always going to shift, that it was easier to sell and there was more money to make on video. And I know that part of our current arrangement with NBC is very, very heavily focused on generating videos and posting videos into our stories, making the stories the vehicle for the videos and the higher CPM that is available. That's the standard. That's the moneymaker for these companies that are trying to turn a profit, as we do. And I still thought there was a future for text. People want to read it. It's not like it's long form, 8,000 words. It provides evidence and it provides information in a very quick and easily digestible way. And you know, maybe this report now is going to cause some of the ad money to swing back into text. It's I've never been able to figure out where like the analytics are when it comes to advertising habits and what the buyers are looking for. And I just think the industry itself just moves in different directions, kind of arbitrarily, and you never know what's going to nudge it in one direction or the other. And it could be that what we've seen this week makes the text-based ads trendy again because they're cheaper than the video ads, and that may cause more of those ads to be purchased coming up in the coming months.
Is there anything out there in the NFL that's really bothering you right now?
Nothing's really bothering me per se. I don't like the excuses when I see a Breland Speaks come out and blame the roughing the passer sensitivity to the fact that he just whiffed on a 41-year-old quarterback and the back and forth. And, you know, people are just complaining about the roughing the passer rules because they want to complain about something. And I get that. I mean, I kind of like always having something that I can complain about. But I think people have kind of gone too far and the media has jumped on in some respects a little too aggressively to this idea that increased roughing the passer penalties is in some way an existential threat to the game. And the other side of it is they're not going to change it because they want to keep the quarterbacks healthy. You know, I didn't like the lowering the helmet rule, and I thought that was something that was going to fundamentally change the game, and I'm very glad they kind of found a way to step away from that in a dramatic and sensible way. But when it comes to keeping quarterbacks healthy, that's what they need to do. And if you start losing guys for extended stretches, the games get a lot less interesting. And the NFL is determined to keep these young and older quarterbacks as healthy as they can because they know that's the way to make the game good. So I wish people would understand that a little bit more before they just jump on the, you know, the get off my lawn rant that football is dying because football's gotten soft. They've been saying football's gotten soft when it comes to quarterback protection for 40 years.
Yeah. The TV rights cycle is just, it's not up imminently, but it's now on the horizon that we're starting to think about it. I wrote a piece yesterday that said that the Jason Witten hire at ESPN, now he's getting made fun of a lot. He's messing up idioms. There's some questionable chemistry with him and Booger McFarlane in terms of when, whose turn it is for one of them to talk. But I wrote that the league office really likes Jason Witten. The powerful owners really like him. Roger Goodell really likes him. And it's part of an ongoing strategy of ESPN trying to mend the fabrics that frayed under John Skipper, whether that was aggressive reporting, whether that was Sean McDonough blaming bad ratings on unwatchable officiating, or John Gruden saying that a game between the Bengals and Steelers was horrifying and disgusting. The NFL was not happy with ESPN's coverage of the league, and ESPN has responded by doing things that make the NFL happy. One of those things is taking Outside the Lines off on Monday and replacing it with NFL programming. One of it is taking Michelle Beadle off of Get Up the day after she said she's not going to watch football and replacing her with five women who do love football. And then there's also putting Witten in the booth because the owners they see him as somebody who's unlikely to present their product in a light that they're unhappy with. And I believe that this is all part of ESPN's strategy to get into the Super Bowl cycle with ABC, NBC, I mean, with NBC, CBS, and Fox to simulcast the game on ABC with ESPN in the next league rights. Could you see ESPN, ABC getting into that rotation?
Well, look, if they're willing to pay enough money, then anything is possible. But I agree with you. If they're going to have the Super Bowl, it has to be simulcast on ABC. I think that Monday Night Football generally should be on ABC. I don't think there should be a cable-only package other than maybe the NFL Network thing that they do, because the NFL understands that you're going to get the biggest possible audience. Even now, you're going to get the biggest possible audience on three-letter networks, broadcast networks. There are still millions of people in this country who rely upon that free signal that flies over the air that you grab out of the sky, whether it's people in cities, whether it's rural, that they don't have internet, they don't have cable, they rely on those free networks, and that's why those numbers tend to skew bigger. And so ABC needs to be involved more. I've been saying they should put that Chiefs-Rams game November 19th on ABC as well, just as a one-off thing. And again, I don't know the logistics of that from an ESPN subscriber fee standpoint, but I agree with you that it would absolutely have to be on ABC. And you know, the rotation goes to one every 4 years instead of one every 3 years. Again, it all comes down to the dollars that are in play. And I think it's important to have the good relationship, regardless of whatever ESPN's objectives are as it relates to Super Bowl or not. The notion of being a business partner with the NFL but having an overly aggressive reporting function, and I think at times the Outside the Line stuff, the Fainer Water stuff on concussions, I think it was a little bit too aggressive. I mean, one of the lingering concerns I have about the League of Denial book and the documentary that went along with it, there was absolutely no discussion given and no focus applied to the NFL Players Association's role in the issues with concussions and hiding the evidence and keeping the information away from players. And the union is the players, and the players are the union. But boy, that really undermines the narrative that this is all the NFL's fault. So I could see things like that bothering the NFL. And I think from talking to people who know the dynamics between ESPN and the NFL, it's that overly aggressive, and at times, you know, just it felt like it was agenda-driven news gathering and reporting that pissed the NFL off more than anything else. And you've seen that subside, I think, significantly in recent months.
Well, I mean, but by the same token, sometimes the NFL does things that obviously really need aggressive reporting. Like you mentioned Deflategate up top. They totally bungled that. I think they also bungled Bountygate. And Ray Rice, for that matter, too. So sometimes, like, the NFL gets overly sensitive for issues that really is them, to use a Jason Witten line, kicking themselves in the foot.
Two or three examples of things that come to mind without me researching it, where it's an example of a disconnect between aggressive reporting and analysis and criticism of obvious leak problems like Deflategate, like Bountygate, like the Ray Rice situation. One that I can think of is, remember that goofy report that came up several years ago that Mickey Loomis, the Saints GM, had some sort of device where he was listening in on the opposing team's play calls in real time, or there was some sort of vague spying thing that John Barr was pushing. And the Saints responded to that as aggressively and loudly as any team I can remember. And it never went anywhere. It just dumped. It just fizzled out. But that's a strong allegation to lead with and make a big deal about. And then remember the year after Deflategate, the 2015 season, right before the start of the season, there was this big splash where they went back and picked at the wound of Spygate and went into all these little details about Spygate. Some of them were new and some of them were compelling, but it felt like there was just too much of an effort to try to tear down the Patriots over things that had been settled years ago. And you know, because I think what happens is the news gathering and reporting, you know, it's one function, but then at some point that gets caught up in this idea of how best do we present it. You know, I remember there was a story about the Steelers doctor's connection to steroid distribution, and that all happened to conveniently drop, like as the Steelers were in a playoff run. And I just feel like there's too much of an effort to take whatever they've found from a news standpoint and turn it into something bigger than it is. And I think that's the kind of thing that gets under the NFL's skin. And get back to my point on the Fainter-Wawata stuff with the concussion focus. The idea that you just completely gloss over the fact that the union had a seat at the table when the mild traumatic brain injury committee was doing all the things that laid the foundation for the litigation and the arguments that the NFL get this information, that doesn't fit with the agenda that it's all the NFL's fault, so it just gets ignored. Those are the kinds of things I think. You know, the NFL understands it's going to get criticized, but the NFL wants to be fairly criticized, and the NFL doesn't want to take and see those areas where criticism is justified and have it turn into some sort of an unjustified attack that is over the top. Now, the reality is there's going to be, you know, differences of opinion as to whether it is justified or unjustified, but I mean, I can think of several examples where I get it. I understand why there's a belief that maybe ESPN tries a little bit too hard to show that there's a firewall between entertainment and news gathering and tried to make too much of things for whatever reason, to have credibility in the industry. I don't know what, but there were several examples where I think they went too far in their effort to make the NFL or one of its teams look bad.
I know you've got a hard out in 3 minutes. Is there anything I didn't ask you that you're chomping at the bit to discuss right now?
Not really. I'm just glad that the season is off to a good start. I enjoy football and I enjoy writing about the game, and it's nice to not have, even though these, like, you know, Deflategate's good for business, I don't know how many of those things are ultimately good for business. And it's kind of nice to just have the game drive the narrative this year, because there are a lot of great young players who need to be showcased, and there are a lot of great older players who are still getting it done. I mean, Drew Brees is just fascinating to me, what he's doing at this age, and he looks as good as he ever has, and he can just keep going as long as he wants to. And this is a great time to be a football fan, and it's kind of like we're emerging from a few years where things were kind of ugly and nasty. It's just kind of nice and pure to have a season where it's all about the game, and we can really enjoy that. And, you know, the NFL isn't kicking itself in the foot, and it doesn't have to pull a rabbit out of its head in order to get us all interested in the game.
All right, thanks, Mike. Much appreciated. Once again, you can check Mike Florio out basically anywhere on NBC Sports platforms, Pro Football Talk, NBCSN in the mornings, PFTPM in the afternoons, Football Night in America on Sunday night. Best of luck the rest of the season. Hopefully we'll talk again in a few months.
Bye.
Bye.
Touch turns strange.